It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Welcome to the History Unplugged podcast, the unscripted show that celebrates unsung heroes, myth busts historical lies, and rediscovers the forgotten stories that changed our world. I'm your host, Scott Rank.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the next installment in our series Rendezvous with Death, where we're looking at Americans who volunteered to fight with the French Foreign Legion before America formally entered the war. In the last episode, the Americans we were following were training with the Foreign Legion, with veterans as well, getting hazed and learning how to enter combat situations. Now they're boarding a train for Toulouse and going to the front line. When they were on the train to Toulouse, in a sense, they were getting what they wanted. And the journey in the sealed cars made certainty of that fancy. Hundreds of thousands of men had already fallen in World War I. The Americans would be entering a war zone occupied by two armies, exhausted and dazed by the efforts of August and September. The fallout of the fighting, abandoned equipment, bloated, unburied corpses lying in unmarked thickets, shrapnel marks scarring the shutters of train stations, greeted them once they disembarked at Camp de Molay. From there, the legionnaires traveled by foot, 35 kilometers per day on average, to reach their final destination. This task wasn't eased by the fact that the Legion was still refusing to issue socks to the men. Instead, it gave them each small squares of cheap muslin, called Russian socks, to apply to parts of the foot inside the boot. But in inexperienced hands, the cloth chafed rather than protected the skin. When the inevitable blisters appeared, the officer Heinrich Wiedemann showed the newcomers how to drain them by passing a needle and thread dipped in tallow through the lesion. Whenever the reason, the thread he recommended did work. The appreciative Americans were learning how to survive as a legionnaire. Another aspect of Legion life was the suspicion, bordering on hostility, that it engendered among the French themselves. The Legion had a bad reputation among the native population. Whenever they approached, local merchants would shut their stalls, shouting the warning, "Shut your doors, it's a Legion." The reason became clear when a particularly bold, or gullible, merchant sold the Americans food and drink out of a tent, while their Algerian counterparts slit the back of it and stole the man blind from behind. The Americans, suitably impressed, came up with a song to commemorate this larceny. "We are the famous Legion that they talk so much about. People lock up everything whenever we're about. We're noted for our pillaging, the nifty way we steal. We pinch a baby carriage and the infant for a meal. As we go marching by and the band begins to play, you can hear the people shouting, 'Lock all the doors, shut up the shop. The Legion's here today.'" The Americans, in contrast to other groups, were generous and had plenty of money to spend. However, the money could do little to alleviate the scourge of lice that bloated on their bodies during the march and never fully left them afterwards. David King and others blamed their less hygienic North African comrades and referred to the lice as Algerian cooties. It's worth noting that a corporal who served with the Americans described them as the dirtiest, lousiest, meanest soldiers we ever had. But this itching, scratching, and overall dirty existence was something that the men never became fully accustomed to. The inability to rid oneself of vermin could easily lead one to brood. Alan Seeger, for instance, already possessed a reputation as a pensive man, and he seemed to take the tiny and persistent parasites as a personal affront. Cleanliness was an unobtainable luxury in this group. The march north took the 1st and 2nd regiments up the slopes of the mountains overlooking the city of Reims, where cannon fire could be heard. As Herbert Molloy Mason Jr. later described the scene, in columns of fours, the 4,000 legionnaires, who coiled gently around the slopes and through the yellow-green champagne vineyards, resembled, from a distance, a mammoth blue and red caterpillar working its way up the side of the mountains. Alan Seeger remarked in a letter to his mother how curious it was that on this slope, the grape pickers are singing merrily at their work, while on the other, the batteries are roaring, boom, boom. Reims Cathedral, which had been the site of the coronation of France's kings since the days of Clovis a millennia ago, had endured massive bombardment by German guns. History and God mattered little. The war satisfied its own needs, little regard for what had come before. The broken cathedral stood as a monument to the horrors of World War I. Interestingly, the local populace was not always friendly in this region of eastern France, close by the German lines. In one village, Americans were billeted on a reluctant farm family. Their host's unwillingness seemed to have been warranted when one identified American, too tired to bother climbing down the ladder of the loft he was sleeping in, urinated unwittingly onto the family's invalid grandmother sleeping below. It was revealed soon after that the family and most of the village were in communication with the enemy, eagerly waiting a German counteroffensive to liberate them from the French and the Legion. The American can now look back on that mistake with a clear conscience. With badly cut up feet, soldiers chafing under 100-pound packs, and a general lack of proper food, a number of the Americans chose to petition a colonel, informing him they were simply not fit to continue any further on feet they described as marmalade. The officer, on horseback, pulled his revolver and aimed it squarely at them. The message was clear: get up and move or die. Villages came and went with little incident. At Verzenay, the 1st Regiment was ordered to deploy near the town. Meanwhile, their footsore comrades in the 2nd Regiment were greeted with the joyous sight of buses sent to ferry them the rest of the way to their destination, north of the Aisne River, which they crossed on October 26 on the road to Curie-les-Chaudards. Curie was the French Army's main rear staging area for the Aisne-Champagne Front, then considered the cornerstone of the defense of Paris. 48 hours of rest in Curie, then to the front lines for the first time. Their odyssey since leaving Toulouse, culminating in a general weariness, compounded by ignorance, made the men of the 2nd Regiment more vulnerable than they should have been. In the evening darkness of October 29, 1914, they trudged single file through a wooded area towards the Germans. The tree limbs tangled so thickly above them that the moon's pale rays were blotted from the ground. Here they encountered for the first time the constant companion of the frontline soldier in World War I, and that is mud. Mud so thick it would pull the boots off of one's feet. Mud, described like chewing gum, with a stench putrid and obscene. Arriving on a hill facing the German lines, the legionnaires slipped silently into the rifle pits that had been dug by the men they were relieving. Low trenches that were far from the formalized and at times quite elaborate trench systems to follow. Dawn came, revealing a beautiful and peaceful Picardy countryside below them. 5 novice legionnaires decided to leave their pits and stretch their cramped legs. The red kepis and trousers immediately caught the attention of enemy artillery observers and drew the fire of the big German 77s. 3 of the Blues were killed immediately in the blast. The 2 survivors were grisly sights. This was the Americans' first encounter with death in combat, but the sight would eventually become routine. One had to be hardened to it, or one would lose one's ability to persevere and fight. But this mindset had to be learned. Shortly after the losses from the 77s, David King witnessed a gruesome scene that stayed with him for the rest of the war. He wrote, "A lucky shot passed clean through the loophole and burst clean inside. Our squad rushed in to help the survivors, there were none, so we set to work to clean up the mess. I was struck by the practical coolness of an old legionnaire who was transferring a mess of blood and brains from the floor into a kepi with the late owner's spoon." At the time of the first deployment into the front line, the two armies' defensive structures were still rudimentary. The barbed wire that would become synonymous with World War I combat had yet to be installed along most of the still hardening Western Front. The resulting fluidity in what would come to be known as no man's land meant that covering patrols had to be sent out nightly to give warning if the Germans chose to launch a surprise attack under cover of darkness. The first time that Harvard grad and writer David King went out on patrol, his commander was Edward Morlaix, whose wealth of experience fighting in the Philippines and Mexico was valued by his younger comrades. but King remarked that though Morlaix was a good soldier, he could be slightly erratic and impatient at times, and, as future events would reveal, his abusive behavior as a non-commissioned officer, Morlaix was one of three American sergeants in the Legion, would cause problems. King himself came to be held in high regard by his comrades. Jack Bowe would have this to say of his youthful comrade. He was of uncomplaining and unflinching disposition. Though small in stature, he was great in courage. I have seen him march without a whimper when his feet were so sore that only the toes of one foot could touch the ground. He always had a cake or two of chocolate and was willing to divide it with the individual who could furnish fire water. The first patrol proved to be one of the more hilarious episodes of this more often than not ghastly adventure. As the men set out towards the German lines, they perceived a dozen or more shadowy forms moving in their direction. After a brisk retreat back to their own trenches to report, the highest-ranking non-commissioned officer ordered general firing, level with the ground until the enemy could be aimed at more clearly. Shots rang out in the night in front of them, and gunfire erupted along the line. 30 minutes later, the firing stopped, when someone recognized that the return fire was coming at an angle formed by another Legion unit at the end of the line. An inspection of the battlefield revealed 12 cows that had been grazing, 9 of them killed in the crossfire. The next day, the lucky Legionnaires dined on beef skewered on their bayonets, cooked over low fires.
This episode is brought to you by Calitrin. Text the word UNPLUG to 30605, and I'll send you a link to a wonderful product that can help you finally succeed in shedding that extra weight. I took Calitrin for several weeks last year, and I felt great in several ways. I felt stronger, my workouts felt easier, I slept better, I was noticeably trimmer, there was no downside. Text the word UNPLUG to 30605 right now to see this week's special offer on Calitrin. Calitrin contains collagen, the most abundant protein naturally occurring in the human body, which decreases as we age. Taking Calitrin promotes better sleep, more energy, less joint pain, and best of all, weight loss. Calitrin has an 86% success rate with their 90-day supply, and this week, take advantage of my special offer. Buy the 90-day supply and get an extra month free, plus free shipping. Ordering is easy. Just text the word UNPLUG to 30605, and I'll send you a link to the special offer. Again, text UNPLUGGED to 30605.
The history of the popes of Rome and Christianity reaches into nearly every aspect of history. In the History of the Papacy podcast, we step over the rope. We dive in to discover more about the people, events, and background that define the influence of the popes of Rome and church, not only on the West, but the world. To start listening now, go to ParthenonPodcast.com or search for History of the Papacy on your favorite podcast platform.